It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
You know, we live in an age where we're constantly now, I mean, every single day being asked to rate something, to weigh in. You get a food order from DoorDash. Would you give it 5 stars? What about the delivery? How was the delivery guy? And you don't want to screw the delivery guy, so you put down 5 stars unless he, you know, spills it all over your front porch. You buy it something for $10 on Amazon. Will you rate us on Amazon Marketplace? Give us a like on Facebook. You know, it's just this constant thing. Everybody wants to be liked and rated and, you know, review our restaurant on Yelp. It's just this constant bombardment. I don't know. Do you have time for all this? I don't. Go promote your own product. You know, if something's especially good, obviously you want to give props. So it cracks me up now when I go to the New York Times and there's usually a live coverage of whatever the hot issue is. Other papers do this too. And so it's got, you know, it's kind of like a scrolling blog. It's got regular updates. So lately it's been all about the Trump Mar-a-Lago situation, etc. So I click on it and a little box pops up. It says, what do you think of this live coverage? Take survey. So now even the New York Times is doing it. The New York Times wants to be liked. The New York Times wants to be loved. And it's just something that's just so funny about it. It's like a virus. It's inescapable. There's nobody you can buy anything from without getting this sort of thing. I don't know. I mean, I with newspapers and websites, I get like, you know, leave a comment. But a lot of people have disabled their comments because they get so nasty. You know, would you retweet this? I get that. You like something, you retweet it, you repost it on Facebook and all that. But take our survey. And you can't escape it. It's a little pop-up box. So it's the age of the people tell the other people what's good if they have the time. All right. So the big news yesterday, obviously, fill in the blank. You know what I'm going to say. The big news had to do with Donald Trump. The big news almost always has to do with Donald Trump. And I will have some trenchant observations about this. But yesterday, just when we thought everybody had exhausted endless media speculation based on still on very few facts about the what was either out of control raid by the deep state FBI that is out to get Donald Trump, except that Christopher Wray, Trump's appointee, still runs the bureau, or was a perfectly legal executed search warrant in which a court granted the authority for agents to, it's now been reported, you know, go in a very professional manner, search the home. I know there's like, they went through Melania's wardrobe. Well, they're trying to see if anything is hidden in any particular place. So, you know, take your pick. You can turn on any cable channel, go to any website, any hour of the day, and you'll see this debate raging. But there was a new wrinkle. The new wrinkle was Donald Trump taking the fifth. And look, I believe in the right to avoid self-incrimination and not necessarily have to be presumed guilty because of it. But, you know, in a situation where we're like, this is unprecedented, a former president, you know, arguing that the election was stolen a year and a half later, and this is unprecedented, an actual raid slash search warrant executed at a former president's house for just because he may have had some role in the Capitol riot. And then, this is unprecedented, a former president of the United States invoking the Fifth Amendment. Now, this is in the New York State Attorney General civil suit, not a criminal case, although it could be shared with the Manhattan DA's office. This is the probe into the Trump Organization and whether or not assets were inflated and so forth. And Letitia James, you know, who ran for State Attorney General saying she would hold Donald Trump accountable, and who has said all kinds of very harsh things about Donald Trump, thought she finally had him. He had to, his order to testify in this deposition. And he shows up, and then he comes out, And he says he declined to answer the questions under the rights and privileges in a statement, you know, afforded to every citizen under the United States Constitution. He, of course, has just trashed Letitia James, accused her of conducting a witch hunt, and on and on and on. Now, Trump knew he had a problem. He had a problem which is not dissimilar from the problems surrounding the Mar-a-Lago situation, which is all the people who are now saying one thing had it another time. For example, FBI investigating Hillary Clinton said another thing. So he decided to get out in front of it, knowing that it would take about 4.5 seconds for journalists to dig it up. So Trump says, he puts it out in the statement, "I once asked, if you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Now I know the answer to that question." He says, "When you're targeted by lawyers, prosecutors, and the media, you have no choice." And he has this thing that this is all coordinated, that the timing of the state attorney general civil suit is also coordinated with the House January 6th committee, is also coordinated with the Georgia criminal investigation, is also coordinated with the federal agents, the FBI agents who showed up at Mar-a-Lago, when, by the way, Trump wasn't there. Okay, so when you get into it, if the former president did testify and said certain things in that deposition, it could be used against him. He's not, it's not exactly some paranoid fantasy that he is not going to face the possibility, only the possibility, I say, of criminal charges. So staying silent, says the New York Times, could hurt Trump politically at a time when he is hinting that he will join the 2024 presidential race. By the way, he hasn't been hinting. He's been flatly saying, "I've made a decision, I'm going to do it." Now it's like, oh, he's going to do even faster. Instead of waiting till next Friday, he'll do it on Thursday, you know. But jurors in civil matters can draw a negative inference when a defendant invokes his or her Fifth Amendment privilege, okay? So what did Trump actually say? And here it is. He once said at a rally, "You see, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?" So, again, he says he has absolutely no choice. Many prosecutors in the country have lost all moral, ethical bounds of decency. So it wasn't all right then. It was a mob tactic. It is all right now because everyone's ganging up on Donald J. Trump. But look, it was smart to, you know, acknowledge that he had said something completely different. Left the context out. Okay. And then you get into the whole business about why doesn't he release the warrant. Now one of his lawyers is saying, well, they were only able to read the warrant, but they don't have an actual physical copy, and it's sealed, and they have to get permission, and so forth, because, you know, a lot turns on the warrant. Meanwhile, Justice Department saying nothing, Merrick Garland saying nothing, under the theory that don't pull a Comey, under the theory that you don't talk about a confidential criminal investigation until you decide to charge or not charge somebody, but as a result, there is silence from DOJ, and I would say they're kind of losing the PR war because Trump and his allies are doing a lot of talking. In other news, this came as a bit of a shock. Justice Department has charged a member of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in connection with an alleged plot to assassinate John Bolton, the former Trump National Security Advisor, accusing this man, who, by the way, is not in the United States. He's at large. Shahram Porsafi. Accusing the man of attempting to pay individuals, known also as hitmen, the kind of people who would take the Fifth, you know, $300,000 to kill Bolton in D.C. or Maryland. John Bolton, former Fox News contributor, put out a statement thanking the Justice Department for taking this step. Federal officials said the assassination of Bolton would have been in retaliation for the U.S. military killing of, and this was in January 2020, of Soleimani, Qasem Soleimani, top commander of the Revolutionary Guard, branch of Iran's military. Soleimani was killed in a drone strike in Baghdad. Bolton, who did not want the sanctions against Iran lifted, was a main architect of the administration's maximum pressure campaign, reading here from the Washington Post. The idea was to cripple Iran's economy to the point that its leaders would have felt pressured to bargain away any nuclear ambitions and missile technology, because when Trump took office, he didn't renew the treaty that President Obama had negotiated. And Bolton says this, "While much cannot be said publicly right now, one point is indisputable. Iran's rulers are liars. terrorists, and enemies of the United States. Their radical anti-American objectives are unchanged. Their commitments are worthless. Their global threat is growing. Well, I'm glad that that step was taken. Doesn't mean there wouldn't be other plots. It's also nice to know the Justice Department's on the case. And the fact that the guy worked for the Trump administration is irrelevant. Now, in going back to the whole Mar-a-Lago situation, Politico has now identified the federal magistrate who signed off on the warrant. You know, you don't just get to go to anybody. You have to go to kind of a special magistrate. And there were a lot of headlines that I thought smeared the guy. And it gets a little complicated, but bear with me. That smeared the guy because of this. It would say, judge who approved Mar-a-Lago warrant linked to Jeffrey Epstein. As if, you know, he had flown off to the island with him and was having a grand time with underage girls. Here's what actually is the situation. Now, he did, this guy, the judge, whose name is Judge Reinhardt, and he is known in the Palm Beach County legal community. He had been a prosecutor. He had been a defense lawyer. Politico says he's well-respected in that legal community. He is married, Judge Reinhardt is, to a circuit court judge, Carolyn Bell, who was appointed to the bench by Rick Scott, a Republican, who was then governor, now senator. Judge is known for his meticulous nature. Well respected, it says. Now, he worked as a federal prosecutor until January 1st, 2008. The next day, his appearances are not great here, he became a defense attorney representing employees of Epstein, according to a story at the time by the Miami Herald. So, you know, as reprehensible and as heinous as Epstein was, you know, he and people who work for him are entitled to representation. That's the way our legal system works. So the Herald says that employees included pilots for Epstein, his scheduler, and a woman who has been described by some of Epstein's victims as his sex slave. Epstein, of course, committing suicide in Manhattan Federal Jail. I know some people don't believe that, but that was the official ruling. Now, the Herald reported that in 2011, Reinhardt was named in a lawsuit where he was accused of violating Justice Department policies by representing the employees. Reinhardt denied the allegations, said he did not participate in Epstein's criminal case, did not learn any confidential information while working as a prosecutor. So that remained in dispute. But again, he wasn't palling around. He was representing employees. You can say, well, you know, an ethical lawyer wouldn't have taken that case. Okay. But under our system of justice, everybody's entitled to a lawyer, even the creepiest, most pathetic and disgusting individuals on the planet. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, here's a little bit of clickbait, because with Biden having been on this absolute roll for 2 weeks and signing all this legislation now and having taken out the leader of Al-Qaeda, al-Zawahiri, The Hill had a headline saying, you know, Biden gets a bump. I don't have the exact headline in front of me. And it's based on a Reuters poll. So you go and look at it, however, and you're thinking, okay, you know, Biden finally getting some credit for doing some good things, and maybe how much did he go up? 6, 8 points, maybe 10 points? So Biden's approval rating rose to 40%, up 2 points. Disapproval rating fell to 55% in this Reuters survey. Okay, 40% is pretty lousy for an American president. And up 2 points, it's margin of error stuff. The people who write these poll stories now realize that anything under 3 points could easily be the opposite outcome because there is such a thing in polling called the margin of error. No, he came up 2 points. Well, the lowest he has been in this poll has been 36. So he was at 36, he somehow came up to 38, and now he's up 2. But it's still 40%. And the reason for the improvement, if there is a slight improvement, again, margin of error, Biden's approval among Democrats rose 9 points last month. to 78%. 12% of Republicans, well, you're not surprised by this, approve of Biden's performance. Now, Joe Biden had an important bill signing yesterday. This was the bill having to do with veterans. They've been trying to get this bill for decades, who were exposed to Agent Orange in the Vietnam War. Biden mentioned he'd been a co-sponsor of legislation on that back in the day with others when he was a senator for, you know, 112 years. Also, you know, John Stewart was in the audience and Biden gave him a shout out, you know, because John Stewart blocked the effort by some pissed off Republicans to block the bill and delay it. And finally, it passed with 86 senators. It was truly a bipartisan bill. And, you know, Biden made reference to the fact that I don't want to hear from the press again that you can't get bipartisan stuff done. People laughed at me, said, no, Joe, you're living in the past. But they did get it done. They got it done on the CHIPS computer bill, which he signed the day before. And they got it done yesterday on this veterans legislation, which has been so heartrending. And Biden was at his best. He wasn't coughing like he was the day before. You know, unfortunately, he may be over COVID, but his voice just wasn't there yesterday, the day before, I should say. But yesterday, he was, you know, thanking people and laughing, and he was being Joe. And the thing is, there was a very touching moment at the end, because during the years that it's taken to get this legislation, people have died. Veterans who were exposed to burn pits died. Biden himself mentioned, and Hunter Biden was there, that his son, Beau, was also, the president says, exposed to this sort of thing and died as well. Now, whether that is the exact cause of death, I don't know, but he feels it personally for obvious reasons. And usually you have the bill signing, and at the end, And the president signs with, you know, 15 different pens, so he can hand out pens to different congressional leaders. In this particular instance, Biden only used one pen. And he turned and he handed it to a little girl who he had talked about earlier. Young girl must have been maybe 7, 8 years old. Her dad, a veteran, had died. Had been exposed to toxic substances. And by the way, the bill provides, you know, some assistance to the families, the survivors. And he whispered something to her that we couldn't hear. And it was just such a touching moment. She's looking up at him. And rather than do the usual congressional thing, he gives this young girl the pen whose father had died. I thought it was just a striking moment. Now, up until that bill signing, remember, this was supposed to be the week when, you know, Biden was going to take this victory lap. And there was going to be a lot of coverage of each of these bills. And he would, you know, he's spacing it out and reminding us, hey, I got this bill through. I got that bill through. Republicans who voted for it, even those who temporarily strayed, deserve credit. True bipartisanship, which is so rare here. I mean, it's like a unicorn. And yet Biden, you know, working across the aisle, sometimes just staying out of it and letting congressional leaders do their thing, has managed to get some bipartisan accomplishments, going back to the infrastructure bill. You know, when Mitch McConnell felt it was in his interest or his party's interest to play along. But up until the bill signing yesterday, it was all, you know, Trump, what about this? Was it a raid? Was it a search warrant? Why doesn't Merrick Garland say anything? Isn't this outrageous? FBI's out of control. This is not America. It's a third world country. You know, Trump and all the debate about Mar-a-Lago. So Biden finishes. And on CNN, they did do a little rap about it. But immediately you saw the breaking news banner. And there it was. Donald Trump takes the fifth in New York investigation. This was a new bit of breaking news. And I can't argue that it's not breaking news. But once again, it was Trump going into the Biden press conference. It was Trump coming out of the Biden press conference. And, you know, in a way you can't, I'm using air quotes here, blame Trump, because I don't think he was thrilled about the, I mean, he may like it now. He may feel like, he has gotten a shot in the arm politically, because no one quite knows what Merrick Garland's gamble was, but, you know, Republicans are rallying around him. They're blaming the FBI. You know, just as I said on yesterday's podcast, Republicans, Law and Order Party, and pro-cop, pro-prosecutor, pro-sheriff, pro-police, and now FBI is awful. Capitol Police, awful. You know, it all depends on who's being investigated. And look, you know, Bill Clinton did it, trying to demonize Ken Starr. I mean, it all depends on who's under investigation. But even though Trump could not have known nor dictated the timing of the Mar-a-Lago, let's just say, visit from the G-men, somehow it just seemed fitting, like we're just back in Trump world, right? And so any further discussion of what Biden signing this bill, which ordinarily there would have been some, maybe a few segments, totally blown away by the Trump thing. Which leads me to this piece in the New York Times Magazine. And I think it's slightly dated because there has been a lot of Biden on TV in the last 2 weeks because of the bills that have passed, the bill that looks like it's going to pass the House on Friday, the big climate and healthcare and corporate taxes bill, and the killing of al-Zawahiri. But if you just sort of roll back the clock 2 weeks, here's what the Times Magazine says. The lack of substantive coverage of the climate speech itself, I guess this is when Biden first was able to break the deadlock, illustrates an unusual feature of Biden's presidency. The leader of the free world does not have much of a visual presence in it. Well, what's he talking about? No president, of course, could have quite the visual presence of Biden's predecessor. Donald Trump filled our screens. The cable channels went live for his speeches and cabinet meetings and grip and grins with foreign dignitaries. Even his walks from the White House to a helicopter in the entirely justified hope that he would do something newsworthy. Try to pick the indelible image of Trump's presidency. It's impossible. There are too many. The white-knuckled squeeze of Emmanuel Macron's hand during an uncomfortably long shake. Standing on the South Lawn reading from a Sharpie festoon legal pad, denying any quid pro quo with Ukraine. Holding up a Bible in front of St. John's Episcopal Church during the protest over George Floyd's murder. These images compete with dozens, maybe hundreds more. Now try to select an image, much less an indelible image, of Biden's presidency. You can't because there aren't any. I don't know if I go that far, but here's what the piece says. This is partly by design. For Biden, his problem is that his predecessor redefined what's expected of the president. Now, there's long been a performative component to the role. Yeah, you're correct with that, New York Times Magazine. But Trump made public performance the entire job. Well, he'd argue with that, but it was certainly a huge part of the job. Just remember Trump, like, walking up and down by the helicopter taking questions. You know, you couldn't not take it. Because at any moment, he might make news. He might make policy. The press covered his every appearance, not just because his behavior resulted in gaffes, because it set policy, point I just made. President would be publicly fulminating about something, and then administration officials would be scrambling to cobble together policy proposals that matched his fulminations. Or they would be under the impression, and I did this reporting for my book, Media Madness, that he was going to have a meeting and choose from three options, and then he would just tweet it and come out, and press would ask him about it, and all the people who planned the rollout were like, well, I guess that decision got made. Biden, somewhat anachronistically, according to this piece, still believes in putting the horse before the cart, which is to say, when Joe Manchin, before the final compromise, seemed once and for all to sink any hope of a climate compromise, Democrats called on President Biden to formally declare a climate emergency. But he didn't do it. And he was speaking to reporters, and he said, I'm running the traps on the totality of the authority I have. Kind of admirable. But Biden's reticence often registers as an absence. And the piece concludes by saying, on their screens and in their imaginations, Democrats are experiencing a great and public void. At some point, someone is going to have to fill it for them. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this. Well, it is true. I mean, Biden is old school in the sense that he doesn't just issue executive orders that go far beyond any power that he has and let the court sort it out. He doesn't... you know, with the exception of that one video that he made attacking Donald Trump after the January 6th hearings, after that final hearing where Trump was shown by the committee the whole business about the 187 minutes and what he was doing and why he didn't intervene earlier to tell his people to go home in peace and stop the Capitol riot. That was one time when Joe Biden took the gloves off. By and large, not doing it. By and large. And you could say, well, he's behaving like a president is supposed to behave or like a president used to behave. But the question is, raised by this piece is Donald Trump just completely redefined that? Now, you can't compete with Trump on that score. And, you know, Trump also gets a lot of bad publicity. And, you know, and this is the ultimate test. I have been saying, because I covered him in New York, I've been saying, and I saw all the fights he got into, I've been saying since he got into politics. For Donald Trump, bad publicity actually helps him. And the one time I thought, well, maybe this is wrong, was with the FBI agent showing up at Mar-a-Lago, but it looks like it's still true because I think he's winning the PR battle. Again, Biden hasn't said a word. Indeed, the most important revelation of this whole thing is that he was not told in advance that there would be a raid. He has had no conversations with justice. And so he goes by the book, but he does leave this vacuum. Which brings me to this last piece, which comes at the very same subject from a completely different perspective, the perspective of a conservative writer, Charles Cook, in National Review, who, let us just say, is absolutely positively not a Trump fan. So it's a bit of a rant. But he says the following, and he's got this wonderful British accent, which makes everything he says sound so erudite. I am inordinately bored of Donald Trump. I would say by Donald Trump, but maybe that's the way the Brits say it. I'm bored of the man himself. I'm bored of his opponents. I'm bored of his supporters. I'm bored of the manner in which every last question that animates our politics is eventually plotted onto a graph that has his face at the center. You name anything Trump-related, I'm bored of it. It's utterly inescapable. This is starting to strike a nerve here, okay? He says, as time goes on, every topic, every politician, every historical trend becomes about Trump in some way, shape, or form. Every piece of journalism does too. I haven't yet published this piece, he says as he's writing it, and I'm already bored by the responses that it will engender. That's how bad it's gotten. I'm pre-bored. This is some good writing. By the emails, by the analysis, by the snark, by the desire to make every last thing in American life about Trump. Nothing safe. Bring up something that's as old as the nation itself, the Fifth Amendment, say. And within a few minutes, people will be debating whether it is functionally pro-Trump or anti-Trump. Is it Trump adjacent or Trump resistant or anti-anti-Trump? And then without missing a beat, they'll move on to the next topic. That Genghis Khan guy, know who he reminds me of? Yes, we know. This is our politics now. Donald Trump does something, or just as often, someone does something to Donald Trump. That is a trenchant observation, you know, because Trump loves to also paint himself as the victim. Somebody stands up and says something outrageous. I remember during his presidency, he's a sociopath, he's a psychopath, he's Hitler, you know, and then there's a whole debate about that. Everybody looks down to make sure they're standing in the correct place on the game board. Trump said what? Then it must be wrong or right, depending on your position. Wait, you think it might be a bit of both? Whose side are you on anyway? Are you trying to save our democracy? Do you not know what time it is? What about ism? Both sides of ism. Retweet if you agree. Trump broke us, people say. Indeed, we used to talk about ideas, rules, positions, consequences. Well, actually, Charlie, we used to talk a lot about the horse race, too, and we never did a great job covering governing. But nevertheless, previous generations, okay, this is getting a little flowery, argued about slavery or tariffs or free silver or the Interstate Commerce Clause. Well, maybe in 1896, I don't know. We argue about Donald Trump, and even when we don't, we end up referring to him obliquely, as if he were the Earth's core. What do you think of the governor of Maryland, someone says, in Dobbs? Well, you see, because Trump did that or didn't do that. Nothing can actually ever be about what it is. It has to be about Trump. A few years ago, says Cook, someone told me my opposition to Trump's position on American libel law was actually driven by my snobbish dislike of his Queen's accent. Me, a guy born in rural England. Does that seem likely? Never mind. Anyway, he goes on to say this is totalitarian, and people are now who disagree with a lot of Trump's political positions are now pretending to support them because they don't want to be seen as disloyal. People who once agreed with Trump's positions are now pretending to oppose them because they don't want to be accused of being aligned with him. And I think this hits the nail on the head. I mean, somehow, and this has been going on since 2015, you know, Trump, with his sort of innate sense of playing the media, demonizing the media, getting the media to demonize him, you know, there's always a certain sort of symbiotic relationship there. And so it's all about Trump. And even when he's doing nothing, right? He's up in New York minding his own business. Suddenly this search warrant takes place. Trump goes ballistic. Justice doesn't say anything. It kind of backfires, at least until now. We will see whether Merrick Garland overplayed his hand or not. And it's all about Trump again. He takes the fifth. It's all about Trump again. Biden is signing this substantive legislation. I don't say that it's anti-Biden. I think the press is bored by governing. I think the press was a lot more interested in the Joe Manchin drama and the Kyrsten Sinema drama than what's actually in the climate healthcare change bill. And we were starting to talk about that, but then Mar-a-Lago happened. So, you know, give up, folks. It's Trump's world. You know, look, media bias and hype and lack of substance and horse race mentality all existed before Donald Trump. It will exist after he finally leaves the scene. But for the moment, it does seem like everything does circle back to the former president of the United States, who claims he should still be the current president of the United States. Well, I will take a moment to thank everybody here for listening, spending this time with me with no commercial breaks, especially if you subscribe at Apple iTunes. Back here tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.